6:58. Okay, next item on the agenda is written communications. Barry, do we have any?
We received an email dated April 9th from Woodring College regarding a leadership benefit brunch to support Washington's mentoring program.
Okay. Next item is the consent agenda. We're looking for approval of bills in the amount of $250,710.18. Approval of payroll in the amount of $469,221.93. Approval of the council minutes for March the 23rd, 2015. I would entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded.
Are there any
comments or questions?
Yeah, on the minutes, there's names for the people that are on the Public Works Advisory Committee. Raven, can you check to make sure that I'm not screwing up?
Sorry, I didn't check how it talks.
Okay, where are we looking now?
In the minutes.
What page?
What page and what section?
That's what I thought you'd ask. It has to do with the names of the people that were
Friends
appointed.
Friends of the library?
No, it'd be the Public Works Advisory.
Okay.
The one fellow's name is Harchie.
Is that Harcho or Harchie? I might not have that information here. We could check on it.
And the other, is it Goff instead of Gaff?
Yes.
Because I did meet those people the other day.
They were spelled correctly in the request for counsel.
I'll do that, so I'll check
them. Okay, would someone like to care to revise the motion to include correcting in the name for the committee?
Move we accept the consent agenda with the corrections on the names for the Public Works Advisory Committee.
Is there a seconder?
Second.
Okay. Any other further questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion is carried 7-0. Next item is council action items. The first item is consideration of the UGA proposal for Whatcom County. Michael, is that going to be yours?
Yes. Made the mistake of stepping out of the room while you were in executive session.
Okay.
It was right before you came back, apparently.
Okay.
Got hacked. Yeah, that's my question.
Yeah, I don't understand that at all. It's an odd order.
So, Council, you have a packet with a community meeting notice. That's the last thing in the packet. And a staff report from the planning or to the Planning Commission. So that was the information that the Planning Commission was presented with, in addition, of course, to a presentation and public comment. And then you have a recommendation from the Planning Commission, which is the first thing following the request for council action in your packet. As part of the update of the 2016 Comprehensive Plan at Whatcom County, they will be evaluating UGAs, the size of each city's UGA. And they will be making those evaluations based upon the projected or anticipated population growth and how that population growth for the county generally is allocated to the different cities and unincorporated UGAs like Birch Bay and Columbia Valley. You may remember that we've already looked at population, and the city of Blaine developed accepted a fairly vigorous growth projection of over 4,000 additional folks and about a little more than 2,000 additional jobs in the 20-year planning period starting 2016 and extending out to 2036. That was included in the Whatcom County multi-jurisdictional resolution that the county, all the cities in the county, including Blaine, all adopted. Now, that's a non-binding resolution, so it's just kind of everyone's first draft idea and kind of a handshake on the, we'll go forward with these with this concept and these numbers, because everyone needs some basis on which to plan and develop things like capital facilities plans, transportation plans, and such. So the numbers have already kind of been evaluated. When that was done, at that same time, we also did a land capacity analysis. So we looked at undeveloped land and underdeveloped land and made a determination based on making subtractions for critical areas and future roadways and things like that, how many people could fit in Blaine's urban growth area, inclusive of the incorporated part, the city, and the unincorporated part, the unincorporated UGA. And those projections, we had substantial capacity. It's on the back of the request for council action. We had population capacity of 6,600 plus additional people, as is the size of our current city limits and UGA. And population capacity, based upon commercial areas, manufacturing areas, of over 2,800 additional jobs that could fit in that same land area. So we have abundant capacity that exceeds our proposed growth rate by quite a bit, particularly when it comes to population. Our proposed growth rate, as accepted in that multi-jurisdictional resolution, was 4,414 people, and we have capacity for 6,634, so 2,220 extra people. That's a substantial amount. It's almost a 50% increase. So the thought and the consideration of the UGA was peppered with that context of we have a lot more capacity than we need. And so what we did was staff developed some recommendations, and we looked at what our existing UGA land allocation area was. We looked at the existing proposed land uses in there. So for in the future, we have already in our plan some designations of this will be multifamily residential, this will be single family residential, this will be commercial, this will be public uses, because the school owns a big piece of property out in the UGA. Considering that, considering the capacities and such, we made some recommendations to the Planning Commission. But before we did that, we held a community meeting. We sent out notice to everyone who held owned property within the UGA, within the Pipeline Road UGA. We didn't, in this discussion, talk about the small UGA down off of Shipyard Road and Hall Road. It's a very different discussion down there. And so we held a community meeting for the Pipeline UGA. A lot of folks came. We had 25, 30 people, something like that. It was good attendance for that kind of meeting. Answered a lot of questions. Most of the questions were related to why are you annexing us and when is it happening? And it was like, we're not proposing annexation. This is how that works. If you want to be annexed, it works like this. If you don't want to be annexed, this is some of the ways that it could happen, whether you want to or not. And explained to folks that they've been in the UGA ever since UGAs were first established. And so this isn't a new action. It's just another look at it. Some folks were in favor. Some folks were not. They were all encouraged to come to the public meeting to participate in the formal process. We explained to them that we weren't taking public comment that night. We were considering what they had to say, but they really needed to come back in. We were going to kind of summarize the meeting results for the Planning Commission, but if they wanted to be heard, they should come back in. And so then we developed our report to the Planning Commission, and we had a staff recommendation. And the staff recommendation was the alternative F in the staff report, if you had looked there. It ultimately becomes the Planning Commission recommendation. So it's the only illustration attached to the Planning Commission recommendation. And I'm not sure why the TV screens aren't cooperating, but on the wall behind you, I can show you that slide. That's the Planning Commission recommendation. Actually, it's a little bit different than any of the other ones, now that I think about it, because we made some modifications based on the input at the meeting. There we go. They're working now. Oh, they were. So that is the Planning Commission recommendation. And a couple of key things up there are that the public area gets larger than it is in our current designations, because in our current designations, the public area, the public green designation, doesn't cover the entire school property for some reason. Best we can tell, it was some sort of a mapping error, and some of the properties were not included. And the other changes that are significant are, well, all of the other changes are significant. In our current designations, a great deal of that land area is designated for medium density residential, which equates more or less to fourplex development. So it's rather dense development. It allows for capacity for a lot of people. And we've also we made a recommendation to change that. So much less of it is medium density. More of it is lower density, which would be single family, 4 to 6 dwelling units per acre. We also expanded the manufacturing area, so that took away some of the multifamily residential area, and are proposing potentially taking some of it out of the UGA, or not potentially, we are proposing taking some of it out of the UGA in this recommendation, the lower right-hand corner of the image. And I think this has a laser pointer. So this area would come out of the UGA. This is the piece that wasn't included in the public designation, and so that's been corrected. And the only area that would be medium density residential would be a much smaller area closer to the shopping center and the manufacturing area, so closer to jobs and to services. This would be single family. And how that compares to our existing designation is this. This is what the existing designation is. And as you can see, the corner is not cut out of the UGA. The public area is smaller, so it's not covering these baseball fields or the parking and facilities that are in the school's property. And you can see this large area designated RM for residential medium density. And that, we've basically gotten rid of a lot of that, with just a small section of it being kept in the proposal. What this does is it reduces capacity for residential capacity for new population. It brings it down by about 700 people, which isn't a ton, but it is a bit of a correction. It does, however, increase our job capacity. So if you're in favor of that, if you think that having more land for potential manufacturing and commercial uses, making grow that land potentially a little less valuable on the market because there's more of it, and a little bit more developable because there's more of it, and that is potentially a good thing. But really what it comes down to is our UGA is large enough that no matter how we kind of reconfigure it and adjust it a little bit, we're still going to have excess capacity. So I can answer any questions you have about the process and some of the things that were discussed as best I can. But the Planning Commission recommendation, again, is in your packet, and it is for this change, which would increase the manufacturing area, increase the public designation to include all the school property, and substantially reduce the area designated for multifamily residential in the future, making more single-family residential, and, of course, also cutting out a corner of the UGA. One of the topics of discussion during the meetings was the fact that cutting out a corner of the UGA, and reducing the dwelling unit count does ultimately have the potential to mean less utility connections, fewer water connections, fewer sewer connections, fewer electric customers, and that has, of course, an impact on the city's fiscal situation. So there is a component of this that has the effect of reducing potential connections in that area, particularly the area that's outside of the UGA in this proposal, a new piece that would be cut out because we wouldn't be able to serve that with sewer under our current policies. And Raven did point out, and it's important to know, that this is an area that is easier to serve than some areas that we have in the city limits. So the you know, sewer and water are relatively close to this area. It's relatively level out in that area. It's not really challenging to get services. Whereas, as you know, up on the hill, even though we have the East Blaine Infrastructure Plan, which is a great plan on how it can be served, it's expensive to serve. So that's a point worth consideration. Nonetheless, here's the Planning Commission recommendation.
So if somebody has property in the end area, they wanted to do put houses on there, could they get it changed from there?
They would need a comprehensive plan amendment to get it changed. They would not be, under our zoning, able to put houses on it. So they would, if they were annexed, they would get a manufacturing zone overlaid on them. And they could, during the process of annexation, request a comprehensive plan amendment simultaneous to the annexation, so that property could get a different designation, like single-family residential, and then develop that way. But this plan would dictate that they would get manufacturing designation if annexed.
Did those property owners have any impact in the decisions made to keep that front area along the Dell?
I'm not really sure I understand.
Well, who decided that should be just manufacturing and not for homes or anything?
Well, the Planning Commission made this recommendation, so they were the ones who forwarded this to you. However, it is important to recognize that this is the current designation, so the area that you're talking about is already planned, and and those who made that decision were the City Council. And I think that was been this way since 2005. I'm not actually sure of that. So we would propose to make that larger if you follow the Planning Commission recommendation, but it has been designated manufacturing for a long time. I believe it's been designated manufacturing since it was brought into the city limits, or excuse me, brought into our UGA, which was when the UGA was established in 96.
Michael? As I recall, the county approves the total size of our UGA.
That's right.
Within that overall size, who decides the allocation amongst the various zones?
We do. You do.
Okay, so that if the county were to accept this, and assuming Charlie's hypothesis continues, somebody within the M zone could ask for a comprehensive plan update, and that could, in fact, be approved in this room.
That's right. Or you could decide to keep this designation. You don't have to take the Planning Commission one, but there are two different ways to change it. You could change it now, or you could change it later.
Okay, I'm more interested in could we change it later if we...
Yeah. You can. Okay.
Michael, why don't we ever square things off? You know, I mean, like that out of the UGA, why didn't we take it over to the where the green, you know, where the public area is and square it? Why did we leave that one piece in there? I mean, how do you decide what to take out and what to leave in?
That's really hard to explain. It's all smoke and mirrors. Primarily, that segment was proposed for removal because it's mostly 2 and 2.5 acre parcel sizes that mostly all have development on them already, single-family residential development. So those properties are less likely to urbanize or less likely to urbanize in a very well-coordinated, higher-density kind of way So that was the reason why those were excluded. The one on the other side of the line that is in the manufacturing zone was proposed to be included because it is a larger, deeper parcel that may be more feasible to develop a manufacturing facility in the future. A lot of it is really just what seems to make sense based upon the characteristics of the property. And you could make an argument the other way.
Okay, and the same thing would be true of that little section above Pipeline Road on close to Adele.
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't we just have squared that residential area off? Why that little piece up there?
Why the little jog in that line, you mean? Yeah. That's because it follows a property ownership line. Otherwise, we probably would have squared that off, but it followed the little zigzag there is because of the ownership.
Okay, and the piece that is now in the city limits above Sweet Road, that's manufacturing?
That's right. It's manufacturing A. That was the area that was annexed not too long ago, the Tour annexation.
Yeah, so that's MA?
MA, so that means manufacturing, which allows some commercial uses like retail. And the little bump out above that, which is hard to see on the screen, is the fire station.
Yeah. Michael?
Okay. I lived out in this area, and I have family that still has property within this UGA. My question has to do with the stuff that was taken out. And you say that they are able to build on 2.5 acres?
No, it's not what I said. I said it is mostly developed already on 2.5 acre lots. So those are pre-existing parcels that most of those in that area have already been developed. What the county will allow them to do, I couldn't speak to. The current land use requirement is you can't build on something with less than a 10-acre parcel size. But I don't know how that affects people who already have a 2.5 acre parcel. But what I was saying was it's mostly already developed.
But most of that land out there, it's platted.
Yes.
I mean, they've got plats or lots down in the bottom of Spooner Creek.
Yep.
And I guess my question really is, it kind of goes with what Harry's saying about squaring things off. That's a pretty natural break. And that basically runs south from the southeast corner of the public area.
Yeah, so the old UGA boundary.
Yeah, the old UGA boundary. And I guess my concern is that there is still property in there that is not developed.
Mm-hmm.
And it would seem to me that these people are being put at quite a disadvantage by being taken out of the UGA. I think there would be an advantage to be in the UGA in order to be annexed and get sewer. They do have water already.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about power. Is that Puget Power out there? I think we take Puget Power.
It's a little of both. Okay. All down pipeline. It's a smatter.
But Sweet Road is all Puget Power. I guess my concern is that having taken that out, what was the reaction of the people that lived in the area?
We didn't poll them individually, but there were a wide variety of comments and reactions from folks who came to the community meeting. I would feel comfortable, I think, saying that the majority of them would prefer not to be in the UGA and never want to be part of the city of Lane. But there were some others who had a fairly strong opinion that they wanted to someday be able to sell their property to a higher and better use that would get them more money. But we didn't talk to the people just in that little piece and survey them, so I can't answer your question directly.
Michael, just on the basic principle, why would we give up what's currently in the UGA? We always sort of fight for whatever we can get.
Right.
Why wouldn't we just leave it in and let the county come back and say, hey, you've got too much UGA, why don't you take some out of it?
Right.
And then we could, either argue with them or agree with them or do yourself to meet at that point. But why would we offer to take something out of our UGA?
The reason that we put this forward to the Planning Commission, one of these being an alternative for discussion, because we gave them multiple things to discuss, one having some UGA reduction was sort of a sacrificial lamb kind of concept. There's the idea that our UGA potentially could be attacked, could be called out as being too large because we have so much excess capacity. We've already done a lot to try and downplay the excess capacity in the land capacity analysis, yet we still come up with 2,200 extra people capacity. It's more than, you know, a growth. It would be a growth rate that would have to more than double the size of the city in 20 years to fill all that capacity. So this was given, the idea was put forward from that perspective. And during the Planning Commission, I think that they concurred with the idea that this was a less likely area to develop. A lot of the area to the north is already developed and probably ought to just be annexed, was the perspective in the commission. And that they also thought that it did make some sense to be saying, you know, we understand that we have excess capacity and we're proposing a UGA reduction, hopefully such that no one else would propose a larger UGA reduction. But there's no reason that you have to accept this recommendation if you'd prefer to keep the existing boundary. I would just say you need to propose a land use designation for that area. Could be, I would suggest, probably the residential 4-6, which is a lower density development pattern for the future, and then we would move forward with that to the county. The primary, and we have more time. This doesn't have to be done right away. They would like to get this in June, so we are bringing this forward early enough for discussion. So this is the Planning Commission's recommendation, and that's really the only reason why the idea was brought forward.
Basically, we're anticipating that the county would ask us to reduce our UGA. And so this is we're making an offer to them in the anticipation that we hope that this amount will satisfy them as opposed to a larger, is that really what we're doing?
I think a more accurate way to say that is we are anticipating that others will bring to the county's attention the oversized UGA. Not necessarily that the county, from the perspective of the county council or the county planning commission, will say Blaine's UGA is too big and needs to be smaller. That's a very possible comment coming from others in the growth management process.
Michael, the boundary on the east edge for the manufacturing down by the street road, is that a road that goes back there? Is that the one that I'm thinking of?
I don't think there's a road there. There might be a driveway, but I believe there's a road that goes down the middle of the area that's designated as out of UGA. I don't know of another road there. There might be a gravel road that goes there. So a couple options I would suggest that are probably worth considering are, one would be to accept the Planning Commission recommendation, and we would then take this forward to Whatcom County for input into their public process. Or you could remand this to the Planning Commission and ask them to reevaluate it and consider, I would imagine, keeping that area in the UGA. If you're comfortable with this arrangement of land uses, then you probably wouldn't want to have them change that up if they came back with something else. But if you, for example, thought there should be more medium density residential or less manufacturing, you would want to give them that direction if you're going to send it back. There certainly also is the alternative to just say you don't want to make the UGA boundary smaller, and you can vote to apply one of our land use designations to that area here. It doesn't have to go back to the Planning Commission. So it's really a matter of whether you're comfortable with this, whether you think it makes sense to reduce our capacity this way, or whether you'd rather not adjust our UGA, which is totally understandable. It won't be easy to get it back in the future. And you can keep the boundaries as they are, but I would just need to know what color to paint that square.
Michael, 2.5 acres gives you 4 building units, is that?
Are you talking about in the city's zoning, or?
No, on a 2.5 acre lot, if you could have sewer, how many?
In the city limits or in the county or?
Within the city.
Okay.
How many residential units could you have on 2.5 acres?
Well, it totally depends upon what the zoning is. If it were SF1 zoning, you could get about 4.5 dwelling units per acre after you assume subtractions for roads and stormwater management and those kinds of facilities. So if it's 2.5 acres and you can get about 4.5 acres per unit, you're going to have somewhere around 11 or 12 dwelling units. That is single family in our SF1 zone. If it were designated for a higher density zone, you could have 25.
But if you went with, say, the 4 to 6?
Those are consistent with our SF1 and SF2 zones. That's the 4 to 6, that's a new... That's a new categorization for us. In the past, the city has it chosen some of these other illustrations, designated. This is our current designation. The city's adopted designations are RL, which presumably is residential low density. We have a zone that's called residential low density. We have a zone that has the same abbreviation, and this is a comprehensive plan designation, not a zoning category. So it's very confusing, and it would easily lead someone, I think, to the presumption, well, that's the zone that you're going to get, but you really could get the RL zone, you could get the SF1 zone, or you could get the SF2 zone, very likely. Similarly, in the RM, it's residential medium density. That means you could get RM, but you could potentially get RH, which is residential high density. We don't have a category for that, so therefore... Some arguments would be that it must be included in that broader designation. So we want to get rid of this copying of naming from one category kind to another category kind. It's very confusing in our comp plan, and it's confusing for implementation and for people to understand what we're talking about. So that's why in all of these we switched those to Res 4 to 6 and Res 6 to 20. 4 to 6 means 4 to 6 dwelling units per acre, and Res 6 to 20 means 6 to 20 dwelling units per acre. And the reason it overlaps with 6 is in both is that there's one particular zoning category that could easily fall into both, and then you would get 6 units per acre. And if you develop that zoning category at the highest that's allowed, you would be at about 12 units per acre, which is no longer lower density, and it would bridge you out of that category. That's, you may be wondering, why isn't it 7 to 20? There's a bridging with one of the zones. This could be, for example, what you might want to do with that corner if you're not comfortable taking it out of the UGA, is making it residential 4 to 6 instead of that, which is out of UGA.
What did they find so wrong with alternative A? I mean, other than to take out that piece of property, Longstreet Road. What was so wrong?
It's hard for me to answer that kind of question for them, but... What I recall was the idea of the general conversation, for the most part, being of the effect of minimizing the amount of multifamily residential, because it has there were two things related to that. One was its extra capacity. If you can fit 20 dwelling units per acre on that land, it's more capacity.
You wanted more 4 to 6.
Well, you wanted fewer people in the future, if you reduce the capacity of the UGA. So that was one thing that was a big consideration. another consideration was they felt that Blaine had quite a bit of multifamily already built throughout our neighborhoods, and that it wasn't something that they necessarily wanted to promote a large area. I don't know why they decided not to use the BPA power line as the dividing line, which is what that's what that diagonal is on that, is it happens to follow the power line. But they recommended something smaller. We settled upon this.
I guess my suggestion would be that keep the UGA that's there and designate it as R46.
Is that a motion, sir?
That's my thought right now. I don't know what everybody else thinks.
So, bring it by me again. Now, the reason they took it out is because they think you have a better chance of it going through the board because we're taking some of it out.
The reason they took it out was because it reduces the capacity of our UGA. So it makes our numbers a little bit closer to what they ought to be. I wouldn't say that they did it in hopes that it would go through, I guess. That's not... That was the reason staff brought it forward, because the idea is we have so much excess capacity, it had to be, in my mind, part of the discussion, do not have so big of a UGA. That's the most simple way to reduce our capacity, is to make the UGA smaller. I didn't feel like it was appropriate for me to go into the discussion with the Planning Commission in an open-ended, let's really talk about this kind of way, and take that off of the table.
I guess my other concern is that the drainage in the area is down into Spooner Creek, basically, and then it runs into Dakota Creek. And if the city has more control over what's going on in this area, I think you've got a better shot at keeping the contaminants out of the creek.
That's very possible.
Yeah, it's very difficult for us to not run through the process of the Planning Commission. Those are sort of picking up this at the last minute. But I could see an argument being presented to say, we've got more UGA than we need. Let's take it down to where the numbers make sense. In other words, let's get rid of whatever UGA we need to get our numbers to work. But it seems that we didn't do that. We took off, well, let's take off some portion of it. And in the hope that this is going to help us. I'm not sure I understand the logic of that. Why wouldn't we have sat down and said, okay, how much of the UGA will support the numbers that we presented? We presented some pretty hefty numbers. 4,000 people. That's double our population.
Right.
And so we're really presenting some aggressive numbers. Why wouldn't we? And so what we're saying is, with even those aggressive numbers, we've got way too much UGA. And if we were going to give up some our UGA, why wouldn't we give up an amount to support those numbers?
There was a little bit of a discussion of that, but no one was comfortable coming back with a UGA that was about one-fifth the size of what we have, because that's what it would take, almost none.
You know, it seems like the practical UGA doesn't run into this at all. I mean, this is more practical to be in our...
I mean, we've got such a huge capacity above H Street. That throws off our whole planning process, because we've got thousands of homes planned for up in that area.
Absolutely. Councilwoman Stewart had a comment.
I'm just wondering, Mr. Mayor, if you are thinking about bringing that out of UGA back in and changing the area that's residential 6 to 28 to taking a piece out of that to making it residential 4 to 6 to get to the same numbers.
Well,
to reduce the capacity.
Yeah, we could do that. I'm torn between two philosophies. One is I don't think we should give up, ever give up a portion of UGA that we currently got. Because I don't think we ever get it back. The county's not going to give it back if we give it up. I mean, look at what happened when we gave up the UGA above in Semiamo, that portion there. I think that's part we should have kept.
It was taken away from us. We didn't give anything up.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they just took it away. And that's sad. And I think we should just say to them, okay, here's what we currently got. Took away it last time. Let's leave it the way it is and make this residential 4.6.
So that's a couple times.
That portion.
That's two or three times now that I've heard that suggestion.
You're looking for a motion.
Is that a motion, sir?
Well, we're still in the discussions. Is there anybody else, just from anybody got any strong opinions one way or the other?
Yeah, I guess I do, finally. If we were to follow your suggestion B, which is let the UGA match the numbers honestly, our UGA would be essentially zero.
It would be almost gone. Yeah, okay, the problem is the H Street panhandle.
Understood. Okay, so that I don't think that is strategically a viable option, as attractive as it is to me as an old engineer.
Yes.
Having said that, then, I would argue that we should not be engaging in preemptive capitulation by offering up a portion of the existing UGA. I would also follow on my earlier comment, which was the observation that we can, in fact, rejigger these things, the designations within the UGA, as desired, when desired. So that I think what I would be inclined to do would be to reduce the res 6 to 20, put the area back in that you took out of the UGA, and possibly take some of the manufacturing area out and put it into res 4 to 6, just to make the numbers look a bit more appealing. Game the system. If we're going to game it good.
Mm-hmm.
And in answer to your unspoken question, yeah, I will make that a motion.
So, thank you. So, for the manufacturing split, where would you put that line? I would suggest
I'll leave
possibly
that up
there.
To you. I'll leave that to any logical place. My point in doing it is to, I guess it doesn't work, does it? What I'm trying to do is to make the numbers match up a bit better to reality.
Yeah, it's almost impossible to make them match up a bit better, but I think I have a sense of where you're headed, which is to reduce the residential capacity as much as we reasonably can, but also not to overbuild the manufacturing capacity as well.
And I will leave that to your discretion of how to draw the lines, so long as the UGA that results is the UGA that we have today. And so long as you have a non-laughable amount of res 4 to 6.
I would then, if that motion were seconded and passed, I would bring you back a map next time. Because I think there's that leaves too much to my discretion, but I think that makes sense and I can work with that.
Can I just make a comment that if the motion's been made and seconded? You can see that the manufacturers want to be on Odell off the road.
Okay.
In other words, I think that's where the manufacturing should be, along the external parts of the highway or the roads, because that's where they're going to want to be. You can see where this guy wanted to be on Sweet Road. That's why we annexed him in.
Yeah.
And
that's...
I think of giving up. I mean, I would go internally to take away some of that.
Fair enough, but that is, at that level of detail. I'd like Michael to take a first cut, for the Planning Commission to take a first cut.
Michael to work on it. But the concept is that we'll leave the UGA as it is.
That is correct.
And jigger the numbers around.
Within the UGA.
To make it look more reasonable.
Exactly.
Okay, I would support that motion. Are there any other questions or comments regarding the motion that's on the floor? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And we have a motion carried 6-0.
Thank So as I said, I'll bring back a new map for your consideration next time, okay, so that you know exactly what we're, that we're on the same page.
Okay. Thank you, Michael. Okay, the next item on our agenda is a bid award, Groundkeepers Central. Raven.
Well, good evening. As you know, at our last meeting, we ended up needing to reject all bids on the groundskeeping advertisement. And the reason for that is a low bid made a significant error on their pricing that made it not viable, and the high bidder altered the bid form, which is also not allowed. So the process of that did open up the community development director and myself to actually communicating with both bidders and realizing that there might be some economy of scale to the city by separating the advertisement to cover the area east of SR 543, including the cemetery and everything else in Blaine, essentially. And so that is what you have before you. We have an East Blaine and Central Blaine bid award, and we'll do them each separately. For Central Blaine, the low bidder was Clean Cut of Blaine in the amount of $59,143.35. That dollar amount is divided in multiple areas, which I showed on the attachment, the groundskeeping bid comparison by fund is her last page. Just to give you a little bit of an idea, and you could see just in the cemetery alone, by splitting out the bids, the city is saving about $8,000 just in the cemetery fund, and that the prices are fairly consistent moving on down. So for the Central Lane contract, staff is recommending an award to a one-year contract with Clean Cut in a not-to-exceed amount of $59,143.35. I will say that that is a not-to-exceed amount. We have the ability in this contract, unlike we have had in the past, to self-direct some of the work. We have an hourly rate, and we have a level of service that we've asked for completing the work in the contract. And we have the ability to moderate that because we do have an hourly rate. So if something is taking too much effort, we can make that adjustment, or vice versa. If something needs more work, we can make that adjustment. So we are recommending your award to Clean Cut, and I will stop talking now because I'm rambling.
Questions for Raven?
Yeah. We're talking just about Central, right?
Yeah, I kind of blurred it a little bit just to kind of get you oriented to why we have two coming to you. But yes, this is what we're focusing on.
Are the parks, does that include the parklets at the end of the streets?
This bid does. This includes all the parks west of 543. So the only park it doesn't include is Lincoln Park. Oh, and Skalman Park. Thank you.
There's some berries.
Varies is, we had two items that we felt the bidder couldn't quantify at the time of the bid. One was applying new mulch to some of the landscaping beds, and so we provided a cubic yard price for that, and that's what the varies is. And the second varies was for unanticipated work. So I estimated a number of hours. I think I split it 60-40 or something like that, and I asked them for an hourly rate for unanticipated work, so if something came up, we could say, we need you to go there today, like cleanup day as an example. Let's go out and help us do some additional work on Peace Portal Drive in preparation for July 4th. So that kind of that one-time spot. So we don't know which fund that's going to hit because we don't know what the work is yet.
Area that on Peace Portal and Bell Road, that entrance and the one on
Yes. Trying to remember how we split those. I think the ones on 543 are with the East contract, and the one at Marine Drive and at Bell Road is in the Central contract. And those would be covered under street and not parks.
I see that you have several varies on here, as has already been observed, and yet the final bid comes out with an astonishing precision of 35 cents and some odd dollars. Would you be willing to accept a friendly amendment to round it up to 60,000 and be done with it?
We could certainly do that, but that would be making an alteration. The reason why you're coming up with a cent is because I gave them a number of hours. You so say for 100 hours, they bid $1,000.
You understand what I'm saying. I understand
I do.
What you're saying. Leave it.
Okay.
Next question, Steve.
Raven, does this cover the landscaping on Clark Street, which hasn't been being taken care of?
Yes.
Question. If we wanted them to do more, let's say we had a project come up we haven't expected, will they work for that hourly rate?
They're required to work for that hourly rate, and we put an estimated number of hours in for that amount of work.
So we say to them, hey, this is above and beyond the contract that you currently signed.
Right.
We would like you to do this additional work. They have agreed to do that at the current hourly rate.
At that hourly rate, correct.
Okay, got it. May I ask a clarifying question?
Yes, sir.
So even if the total were over 60,000, just to take it into extremes, suppose we asked them for another $20,000 worth of work, they're still required to go over?
We would need to do a contract amount to exceed that, a contract amendment.
But that would be in our hands, and they would be compelled to accept an extension of the contract by $20,000. That's what I understood you to say.
That's not what I'm saying. This is a not-to-exceed contract amount of $59,143.
Okay, so then your answer to Harry's question would be, if we came up with a new project that added something to the mix, then that would entail a contract amendment rather than just saying, here, do it.
If it exceeded the hours that I estimated in unanticipated work, so I put in a good 50, 60 hours in each contract. I split, like I said, I don't remember if it was 60, 40 or what, but each contract has a bulk of hours already for that unanticipated.
Okay, I'm not arguing that you've done anything wrong. You've done it exactly right from my perspective. But your question, the answer to your question is slightly different.
We'd need a new contract or an amendment to the contract.
If the project that you asked for exceeded the estimated number of hours, and I don't, you know, it could be a friendly amendment, you know, where we, you know.
But if they're happy to work for those hours, we would assume that if they came along and we said, here's an amendment to do another 20 hours.
I don't think they'd say no.
I got you.
And there is a provision in the contract language also to renew the contract up to 3 more years.
Okay. So staff recommends the City Council award the 1-year groundskeeping contract to Clean Cut in the amount for a not-to-exceed contract amount of $59,143.35, including an 8.5% sales tax. We have a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 6-0. We are now having the next item, which is the 2015 Groundskeeping East Blaine Bid Award.
Yes, so for this, we've already kind of discuss why we broke it out east and central. For this particular area, we only received one bid. It was from Five Star Services in the amount of $25,660.36. I will say in the 3 weeks that it's been since we last met, we did do a one-month contract for mowing with both Clean Cut for Central Blaine and with Five Star Services for the cemetery to try out, if you will, this new contractor, because we haven't worked with Five Star Services before. And all I can say is that their work has been excellent. The cemetery hasn't looked this good in a couple of years, and they seem incredibly conscientious. They've worked for other cities in the Whatcom County area, and they've provided us those references. And so we're comfortable recommending award to them in the amount of $25,660.36. It's that sales tax that drove the pennies up there.
Dennis Clean Cut was not interested in this project?
That's correct.
Okay. Dennis has a question.
Is the park, is there going to be some work done on Lincoln Park? Is that part of this?
Yes, it is. Lincoln Park and Skolman Park. Lincoln Park is pretty much going to be kept in a kind of a rustic state, but the contract includes walking the trails, picking up litter, that kind of thing.
Further questions?
Okay. And there is a unanticipated item in this contract as well. It's just a slightly smaller amount of hours.
The staff recommends the City Council award the one-year groundskeeping contract to Five Star Services in the amount for not to exceed contract amount of $25,660.36, including an 8.5% sales tax.
So moved.
Second. Motion has been made and seconded. Are there any other further questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Next item is another bid award for a monitoring well.
Boy, just hearing you announce these is reminding me why I am so tired, all these bid awards coming in at the same time. So this project is construction and testing of an 8-inch exploratory and monitoring well up in the Grandis Pond property. I believe I included a little exhibit map here to give you an idea. If you look at the map, there's kind of on the right third of the sheet, there's a circle and then a smaller circle where it says Future Gravity Reservoir. And that is where this well is going. It's on a piece of property that was designated in the Grandis Pond Plan Unit Development for a future reservoir. And what it enables us to do is twofold. One, it monitors groundwater coming in from Canada, which are very deep aquifer, we're talking 1,000 foot deep, we believe is coming through from there. So it gives us an indicator of any problems that might be coming to the well field in terms of our water supply. And also has the ability to serve as a future production well in the event that Grandis Pond is developed. And then kind of third fold is this whole North County water supply idea is kind of contingent on really knowing what the capacity of that aquifer is. And so this well will give us some really good live information about the amount of water that still is available to the city.
Whereabouts is it at?
On the right third of your sheet, you'll see two black dots.
Uh-huh, okay.
It's right on that lot.
Bigger
one. And we've been working with the owner of Grandis Pond. They've drafted and they've agreed to an easement with us for access to the site as well as maintenance. We opened two sealed bids on Friday morning. The lowest responsive and responsible bid was submitted by Holt Services of Edgewood in the amount of $302,476.30. The money to come from for this project is in the water capital budget. There has been a groundwater monitoring item in that budget every year that I've been here, and we've never utilized it. So it's just been continuing to get rolled over, and so that is how we're proposing to add this to our assets. Yes, sir.
The engineer's estimate, $60,000 less. Where did the change in estimate versus what came in from?
He had several ideas. The thought was that gaining the site access from H Street might have been more intensive than he thought. The well needs to be about 100 feet off the existing private road that runs up there, and it's in pretty rough shape. Also, the Holt Services has a brand new rigger that's going to be used for this endeavor, and so I think we're paying for new technology. But we're also feeling very good about what his capabilities are. So we're recommending that you award to the low bid Holt Services in the amount of $302,476.30.
Question. Go ahead, Dennis.
Is Birch Bay going to be paying any of this cost?
Yes. Birch Bay, this will be added to our joint assets for which Birch Bay pays a part every year. We actually talked about Birch Bay potentially paying for this up front and decided that would mess up kind of the equation of what we have programmed with them. So it's much easier from a bookkeeping perspective that we book it and then charge them back with the rest of the joint assets.
With interest.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really know how that works.
So Raven, it's getting late and my kind of trips off here. What we're saying is that this is simply for monitoring, not production. Is that correct?
It is initially being developed for monitoring, but we are putting in a casing big enough that it could be turned into a production well. And that was done deliberately. So we're calling it a monitoring slash production well because we expect at some point it could be a production well.
If Brandis Pond doesn't get developed for the next 20 years, this will just continue to monitor?
Yes, and for that, it is still well worth it because, again, this is the source of our aquifer. It's about as far north as we can get, and we want to make sure that we have advance warning of any issues with our water supply.
A broader question. We have less snow this year. Will that affect our water supply?
Now, I've been asked that from various folks, and that's one of the real wonderful things about our water supply is that our aquifer is so deep. So we're not as dependent on snowmelt as the jurisdictions that are getting their water through surface water, whether it be Lake Whatcom or the Nooksack. It takes a long, 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 long time for that water to get to our aquifer. So we feel very confident that we have a sustainable water supply.
And this monitoring device will tell you that? What will it,
it will give us a lot of information, not only the quality of the water, which is paramount, but also its capability in terms of how much is there. And so we will be able to, as we do with all of our wells, track that information.
Will it tell us at some point when we're running out of water or running out of the supply of water that we currently?
Well, we have, I counted this at one time, I believe we have 15 water right applications right now that are in review, and this, if it's successful, as we expect it will be added to that. So we already have enough water in the Blaine with the existing water rights. We already have enough water for our full population build-out that Michael is estimating over the next 20 years. And that's without this well and without the other 15 for which we have applications.
Okay. Yes, well, you described this as a monitoring well. You described it as upstream from our current well field. The question is, how much of an advance warning would it give us if things were going sour? In other words, how long does it take the water to move from this monitoring location to our current location?
We will know more after it's drilled. And I will get back to you with that information.
That flow is...
All of that is going to be part of their test report. Okay. This is more than just drilling a hole. They have a test report and well logs and all this that they need to provide as a part of their bid. And so I will report back to you when it is done and get you some more information.
How many miles north of the well field is it? Just a rough guess.
Like
1 mile.
1 mile? Really? Okay. So it's right before, you know, the driveway that goes up there is the last driveway on the left before Valley View, if that gives you an idea. And then it's probably a good 600 feet north of 8th Street.
Okay. Don't you have, for the other wells, the rate of movement of that water?
We do.
So it would probably be about the same.
Well, and that's what we'll find out. But we are anticipating that to be the case.
Is there any anticipation that we'll be able to sell any of this to California?
No. Linden, maybe. California, not.
Thank you.
Not unless you get this vertical.
I was just thinking of the trucks going up to leaving here on a daily basis.
Well, I thought you were going to hold
on the train. Train would be good.
So I'm writing down your question, Mr. Greeno, so I can get back to you.
Okay, any other questions or comments for Raven? Okay, staff recommends the City Council award the contract to Holt. Is it Holt or Holt?
It's H-O-L-T. That's a typo. I was just going to give to Sherry.
H-O-L-T Services, Inc., in the amount of $302,476.30.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any further questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion is carried 6-0. Next item is the Walch Marine Wholesale Sewer Contract.
So the reason we're bringing this to you is we really don't have anything in our rate schedule that addresses this type of customer. And so Walch Marine has been operating their boatyard since 2011, off of Marine Drive. They unknowingly purchased it from an industrial business that had a violation from Department of Ecology. And in working with Ecology, one of the options that was made available to them was delivering their wash water to Lighthouse Point. That made DOE happy because it didn't go into the bay. But it didn't make us very happy because they weren't paying for it. And so while you moving forward with this is a little bit different than what we would normally approve, it's because they are dealing with their wash water in the sense that they're recycling it now and they're sending a lot less of that to us. They are unable to capture the stormwater that runs off of their site before it goes into the bay without getting it to us and without a significant capital investment. It was not our desire in Public Works to take stormwater into our plant. It's like the golden rule, you don't do. But with Department of Ecology's support and the fact that they really can't do the capital improvements they want to do until the port finishes their own cleanup. We didn't really want to put this company out of business. And that didn't appeal to anyone of us in Public Works. So since they've made the effort to install this recycling system for their wash water, they've really reduced their contamination risk to Lighthouse Point. They've agreed on this contract, which has a mechanism for paying us for fees that they did not pay over the last 3 years. And finally, we kind of used a little engineering know-how to kind of come up with an idea of what to charge them, since we don't really normally charge for stormwater. So we equated that based on the average rain here to a number of gallons to typical rainfall to what they would be paying if it were, in fact, some other form of liquid waste. So that's what you have before you. I can say that this agreement has taken hours of work by both the property owner, the assistant public works director, and myself, as well as our plant operators. We feel it is the best that we can do by reducing risk to the plant, as well as gaining some compensation for past, as well as future. And we know that as an interim, it's only an interim agreement. At such time as the port finishes their cleanup, these folks can do the rest of their improvements and can be on their way. So that's what we have before you. We're requesting your authorization for the city manager to sign this agreement. We're estimating approximately $600 a month of revenue will go to the sewer fund for this.
So, okay. Dennis, go ahead.
On the back page of the appendix, what is BTX?
I don't know what that is.
Good.
I'll put that good on it.
Not good.
That's a good question.
I don't want to drink it.
And down at the bottom where the tests are, is there a number for those?
The testing thresholds on the bottom are the ones that we do typically and those are the thresholds for which our fee schedule is currently set up for. It's not set up for all these other things.
But if you hit a certain number, is it possible that they're over then?
Well, they're required to do their own reporting to Department of Ecology, and this agreement says that they need to be in good standing with Department of Ecology in order the agreement goes away.
And they have standard numbers that would go in the little slot.
Yes.
Okay. So,
I made a motion. I want to approve it, but I do have a question about. So, do they have a tank that this goes into, and then they pump it out of a tank, or how does that work? Because having been around the waterfront so many years, you've got to really be careful about what gets dumped in spots.
They do have a tank. They're working with an engineer in Seattle on the sizing of it, and they have not sent any of the wash water to the plant since last August. So it's working. And the recycling system requires that such time as they can no longer recycle their wash water, that they need to haul it away, that we won't take it. BTEX is an acronym that stands for benzene, toluene, ethylbenzene, and ethylenes. Yeah. Aren't you glad I answered that question?
I would drink it if I were you.
We really appreciate getting that information from you.
Don't you know about butyl?
I know.
Yeah, stuff we don't want to plant.
Raven, the $600 a month, does that last for 3 years? I know that they owe us some money back the past 3 years.
Right.
So they're going to pay us $600 a month. At the end of the three-year period, does it drop to $300?
Depending on what they send us at that time, the answer would be yes. And again, that $600 a month is an estimate based on whether or not they decide to go through a measured amount as opposed to this assumed rainfall amount that we calculated. So that's probably the worst case scenario.
So the measured amount would then be doubled. In other words, if a measured amount comes to $200,
right,
they're going to send us $400.
That's right. And I believe it is worded in here too that for any reason this agreement is terminated early, the full amount owed in back fees, which is $11,074.32, will be due.
So every that's $600 they sent us, we're going to take $300 off that.
Right.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, Charlie, did you say you made a motion?
I did, I think.
Okay, is there a seconder for the motion to authorize the city manager to sign the agreement with Walsh Marine, Inc. for treatment of their waste stream?
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Any further questions or comments? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 6-0. Next item on our agenda is the professional service agreement for electric utility comp plan.
This is my last item, I swear.
That's permitted.
You're swearing?
Oh, I swore in front of council. So as you know, through our budget process last year, we talked a lot about kind of the declining capital reserves for the light fund and so forth, and also some of the decisions made around the purchase from PSE and whatnot. And really, to your your direction to us was to do a rate study for the light fund this year. However, since our comp plan has not been updated since the 90s, it was our thought that as a part of that, we budget for doing an update to our comprehensive plan. So we have some real numbers that we can then dial into the rate study in terms of future improvements for the light utility. So we submitted a request for proposals, and we received three proposals from different engineering groups, and we selected D. Hiddle and Associates, and this is the result of that negotiation where they're going to be looking at everything from a capital side, from a system side. They're going to look at some of the BPA numbers and as well as looking at ways that we might better balance our two systems, because we have two different substations from which we draw power, and we want to make sure that our switching options are optimal. That was a mouthful. In any event, D. Hiddle and Associates, or the president of D. Hiddle and Associates, worked for CH2M Hill when our previous comp plan was done in 1995. So we're pretty excited about working with them, and we have negotiated a contract that is within budget and accomplishes what we're asking for. So we're asking your authorization for the city manager to execute that contract with D. Hiddle and Associates for this engineering consulting service not to exceed $47,504 and no cents.
Raven, just as a question. This will consider innovative ways we might increase our production of electricity.
Well, remember, we're not producing electricity, we're buying it.
No, but I mean storing it or...
It's going to look at ways that we might be able to optimize when we switch from one substation to another. We actually would benefit a lot from going to the Semiahmoo sub more than the Blaine sub because of the way that BPA charges us. It'll also look at the best bang for our buck in terms of conservation. A big driver is that whole Tier 2 thing, and so they're going to be looking at that and making recommendations to us. But the main thing is to look at our system and see how and what we need to do to improve so we could serve that future population.
They're going to be considering storage batteries that you see on TV where they...
I am... Who knows what will come out of it? He hasn't mentioned anything specifically about the master battery.
In the ocean or anything like that.
I think we're all getting punchy.
I'm just saying, I think one of the things that we're going to have to look at is solar and other things that are coming on the horizon that would obviously be beneficial to us. And I don't know whether that... 20 years from now, or mm-hmm. 10 years from now, or tomorrow.
Definitely. That would fall a good part on the conservation side, yeah. But certainly if there's new technologies that we could be employing to make our utility more efficient, I mean, just like the ESCO project, we're going to look at that.
Okay. Well, I think that's where we should be headed. Go ahead, Dennis.
There's, what, three paths that you've identified and time. When those will be completed.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my other question is, since we've had some experience with this, the city will own the product when it's finished?
Yes, sir.
That's your contract. Okay, any further questions for Rick?
We need to have to make a motion.
Okay, the staff recommends the council authorize the city manager to execute a contract with D. Hiddle and Associates, Inc. for consulting engineering not to exceed $47,504 and no cents. Anyone care to make a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Any other further questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 6-0.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Raven. Next on the agenda is approval of employment contracts.
We'll ask the council to look at that after the next closed session.
Okay, thank you. Next item is Commission, Committee, and Board Reports. Blaine Economic Development Advisory Committee. David, do you have a report?
I do, Council Members, Mayor. Just a brief update. The Development Economic Development Advisory Committee is meeting on a more regular schedule, twice a month. We met last week, had a presentation by a group called the Retail.
You got me.
Retail, you got me.
Coach, thank you. They combine that in all in one word, and I got to the retail and lost coach. And the idea, of course, is to try to figure out how the city can benefit from the large population north of the border. That's been the big question. How do we get that group that comes to us every day in our city to buy packages or pick up things to stop and shop and eat and start helping us with our economy? So the groups we've been working with, two so far, that retail group I just mentioned, plus the Bucks, and that we've provided information on how they go about working with private sector as well as government to help set up those kinds of systems. So things like, you know, developing database solutions with types of products people are buying, where they're buying them, how much they're spending. You know, everything, every time you swipe your card or you give someone your preferred number, your phone number or whatever that is, that they're collecting data about you as well as information you put on your credit application. So there's vast, vast amounts of data. These guys buy that data and they start doing the analytics to determine who's coming into town, what they're buying, who's coming through the border, where they're buying down south at the in Bellingham, for example. So the reason we would want to do this is because we know that particularly national chains, but regional chain stores require data in the decision-making that they have to move here. And an example of that is, you've heard this many times now, that if Mike Hill has been wanting a Starbucks to set up in his property, he wants to build a building and he wants Starbucks to come. He started talking to them, and frankly, they just blew him off. They weren't even interested in talking to him. His realtor consultant began doing their own analytics. They went up and down Peace Portal and started talking to different businesses about what the numbers of people coming through. They talked with us about traffic counts coming off the highway. That compiled was sent off to Starbucks, who basically said, you've got the numbers. And so now they're working on prototypes and drawings and other kinds of things to make that project happen. So that is, I've been fortunate for Mike. Nothing's been built yet, but he's got a pretty good solid start on it. And the reason he had that is because the fellow that he's working with was at one time a coach at the high school. His students, football players, now work for Starbucks, and they're in the retail development side of the business. So they had a little angle in which they were able to actually hand deliver that data on the desks of those people that he knew. That's not always going to be the case. And so Mike's problem is, if he builds a building or has someone develop a building for him, who else is going to occupy it? Well, there's going to be people that follow Starbucks, but they may not be the right tenant. The other part of the problem is, what does he do with the back part of the problem if he puts a storefront on the front side next to Peace Portal? That's going to happen all over the city. There's private property owners that would like to do something with their properties, reinvent them, you know, rebuild them, build new things, and this kind of study and information will help them do that. So the Economic Development Committee is going to meet next week. We're going to have another look at it. This time we're going to really try to focus on bringing a company that does similar work in Canada to us. The problem has been trying to get information across the border. And both Buxton and the retail coach have said they can do that, but they didn't say it with a real strong, yes, we can. So we're going to look and see if we can, at a minimum, find a partnership. So we think the American information is valuable as well. So it's been a really a valuable last couple of months. Things are getting done, and I really appreciate the efforts of the council members who serve on the committee, as well as the people who are volunteering. So I'll take any questions you might have.
Questions? Okay. Thank you, David. Okay, the Blaine Tourism and Advisory Committee. Steve.
We're having a meeting tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock at Semiamu, and no report on the Boys and Girls Club.
Okay, Blaine Chamber of Commerce. Bonnie's not here. WTA Board, Paul.
The monthly WTA meeting will be this Thursday, 8 o'clock, County Council Building. All are welcome.
Okay. Drayton Harbor Shaw Fish Advisory Committee, Charlie.
The meeting was moved to May 13th.
Okay. Tennessee Conure, two committees.
There was an article in the Bellingham Herald regarding the new, what would I like to call it?
Library.
Way to get information from the library on your app.
I've used it. Pretty cool.
And I don't know anything about it.
Streaming videos.
Right. Yeah.
And I got a note from Christine Perkins, an annual report. I don't know whether everybody else got one of these. And they will meet on Wednesday this week. And the senior center, they held a bazaar last Saturday. And they made about the same amount of money, I think it was around $2,000. This Saturday is the breakfast. And then May 3rd is the high tea. And I understand Steve will be helping with that.
Yeah, because you meditate. Yeah, you little bugger. I'll call Steve. He'll be a waiter.
You have to wear the suit now, you know. Okay.
I'll get it.
Thank you, Dennis. Planning Commission, Mr. Jones.
No report besides what you've already heard tonight, and no report from the Park and Cemetery Board, except to say that probably in the next month to 6 weeks, the recommendation will be coming forward up from the Open Space and Committee.
Okay. Public Works Advisory Committee. David.
You guys have heard enough for me tonight, but I thought our first meeting last week went really well. We did a kind of an overview of the challenges that we face with our street funding, and then Mr. Bullock did a kind of an introduction to the transportation improvement plan process. And our goal is going to be for each meeting to kind of be a education about one form of public works or an area of public works that we are next seeking advice upon. And so the TIP is probably the first thing that we want to bring through them, and I'm planning on bringing them the electric comp plan, and I know Mr. Bullock wants to share the water plan, so each meeting will have a little bit of education on that, and soon we'll be reporting some actual recommendations.
Perfect. Thank you. Small Cities Caucus. David, did you want to report on the jail at all? Or
do it now or a little bit later.
Okay. Finance Committee?
Let's see, we met a couple of weeks ago, and we watched a webinar on achieving financial resiliency. And I think the main takeaway from watching that webinar was developing and maintaining a key economic indicator list, which we've already done, and I report on those in my financial reports, but developing a comprehensive list would be very helpful and important, and that would help identify potential financial problems in the future before they become a crisis. In our next meeting, I think we're planning on for the end of this month, we will discuss in more in detail that comprehensive list.
Thank you. Whatcom Council of Governments, there is no report, and Chief Hollander has already made his report. That brings us to Department Reports, Public Works.
Steve used to do this all the time.
I'm ready to clone myself. let's see. Got a bit of a list. You might be getting calls or complaints from your different neighborhoods about the gang mailboxes that have been relocated by the post office. We have been getting some traction with the postmaster, and I just wanted to let you know about that. He actually was in Public Works this afternoon, and Mr. Bullock is working with them on better ways that they can handle ADA access issues relating to their mailboxes. They essentially moved 46 boxes with no permits and no technical support. It was really just we could save all kinds of driver time if these were closer to the curb, not really thinking through that that requires the homeowners and renters to actually step into the street to get their mail. So Working on getting a schedule. Hopefully we'll know more by the next meeting, but I'm encouraged by the level of interaction that's taking place. Our last meeting, we were asked about the number of traffic counts on the 276 exit, the roundabout exit. We heard back from WashDOT that they get about 3,620 vehicles per day. And then that's the off-ramp. And then the main line after the off-ramp is about 4,350 vehicles a day. So approximately 45% of southbound traffic from the border inspection station is taking the off-ramp, which I actually was quite surprised by. That's a lot of people driving through downtown.
A lot of packages.
That's true.
Peace Portal water main over Dakota Creek, the gas companies, you could see, is mobilized and has started their relocation. They're actually boring their line under the creek, and it's pretty impressive seeing all that piping laid out along the road. We have been invited to the pre-construction meeting on May 1st with Whatcom County and their contractor, who coincidentally is Stellar J, who constructed our treatment plant. So I will have more information for you after that meeting on May 1 in terms of when you can expect the closure to take place. I'm going to just say on the rest of this that I will report at the next meeting, because this is going two more things. We have sent out an email, or excuse me, a regular mail to the folks in Vista Terrace, getting kind of a poll from them on whether or not they were in favor of their GFFs being part of the package in terms of their assessment versus something that they would pay at time of connection. Of the 50-some-odd property owners, 20% of those returned the poll that we sent out, and majority of those were in favor of financing the GFFs through the assessment. So that something for you to maybe think about is, you know, our that was one of the things you asked us to evaluate with the property owners, and, you know, if you're comfortable with 20% having a majority, we can keep moving in that direction, or we can try to solicit further comment. So that's something to think about. The Drayton Reach subdivision is going to get a temporary access road for emergency vehicles. You're going to start seeing some public works crews grading there between Dodd and Blaine Road. And so I just wanted to let you know what that is. It's not going to be a permanent, you know, this is the road forever, but until that second phase is developed, we were requested by the fire district to have some form of emergency access so that if there's a train, people can get out off of the developments there behind Hughes. And so that's what that's for.
That's going to go from Dodd Avenue over to Rungi.
Dodd to Rungi to Blaine.
It's actually
over to Late in the development.
Okay. Yeah. And anyway, so the Housing Authority was very cooperative in giving us an easement to do that, and we're just getting ready to start that work this week.
Raven,
mm-hmm.
I got a question the other day. You know, when they put down the sidewalks and so on, they put down that yellow bumpy pad.
It's that's not the ramp?
ADA. Uh-huh. ADA. Apparently kids have taken a hammer to it.
Yeah, is it breaking it apart?
Yeah. And
the guy that
I talked to, he says, why do you put those down? I said, as far as I know, those are required.
They are. Yeah.
Is that correct? That's what I mean.
Yes, that was a correct answer. So if they are getting destroyed by kids, we probably should get a location from you so that we can replace them. So I'm passing out for your reading enjoyment an advance copy of our consumer confidence report, which will be going out to all the ratepayers in the June billing. Thank you.
Frank Arnett.
Frank is our compliance officer and wastewater treatment operator.
Super. Thank you. Public safety, chief.
Just a couple of very quick things. We had a burglary this afternoon in the Airy development out of Semiema. It was a daytime burglary. As far as we can tell, it's a crime of opportunity. They've been doing some maintenance on the gates out there, and so a couple of the gates were left open. We've got nothing. We have no idea if that had anything to do with this, but it was a fairly substantial loss. And I think it's likely some of you might get questions about that, but just to let you know that we did have the incident, and we are investigating it. For those who live on this side, a couple of weeks ago, we had a burglary. A family went away for the weekend. They come back. Their house had been injured and basically used as a party house for a couple of days. And there was some loss there. Really good police work on the part of the officers involved. They did over three dozen interviews, and we got seven people arrested, and five of them were put in the jail. So just to let you know in case anything comes up on those. The only other thing I wanted to mention was that we, nine of our ACS volunteers this past weekend went down to training in Seattle. It's their annual Communications Academy update where we get a chance to take our communications van down. We display it. There are hundreds and hundreds of attendees at this event from all over the state, emergency management folks, and they've given our comm van a priority position right by the front door just because our crew did such a good job with it. So we had nine of the folks went down this weekend, volunteered their entire weekend to get the training. We're really proud of them for having done that. And that's it, unless you folks have any questions.
Questions for the chief? Thank you, chief. City manager.
It takes a lot of nerve to go into someone's home and party in it for 2 days. I can't imagine that. No comment. So I'll just talk briefly about the jail. You've been reading about it. Of course, you had Jack Lowes here recently to talk about it. There's been a lot of work behind the scenes with the cities, the small cities in particular, but also Bellingham, to revise the document that was first described to the council. There's a public hearing tomorrow night at the city or the county council chambers. I'm going to be attending that. I'm not sure the mayor is going to. We had talked a bit about it. So the plan now, I think, is for us to study it more. John Sitkin, fortunately for us, I have to tease the mayor and Sue Mass, they've been paying him to study it, and so we're getting the benefits of their expenses, so we don't have to pay it twice. But he's been working on that as well, and I think the big change for us is under the way it's been re-proposed, and the biggest factors is they've reduced the cost and they've changed the interest rate and they've changed a little bit of the term, 5 extra years. All of that has come forward with savings. And the savings were nearly $600,000 in a particular area. It affected the city of Linden the most because the savings then could be applied to a use based upon demand as opposed to just population. So for the city, our city, there's a calculated increase. We were going to get about $30,000 out of this deal over time. That went to 70. It's real money. For the city of Linden, it went to about $250,000. So it's really money for that. So I felt like we've made a lot of progress. We give lots of credit to the city of Linden, particularly Mike Martin. He's done a really yeoman's job of pulling this thing together and studying it. But everybody participated, and it was a very fruitful outcome. So we'll be talking about that. Either we'll have a study session or we'll have a, this is a regular agenda item, but we're going to ask you at the next meeting to approve that memorandum of understanding. If you'd like to get copies of that, I think we can probably put them on the webpage. So I'm sure the county has it on their webpage as well, but we'll provide that for you on our webpage. I got that link. We'll just give it to you. Others might be interested as well. We should have everyone look at it. The Pavilion Project is my next report. We're coming right down to the wire, naturally, and tomorrow afternoon, 5:30, we're making a presentation to the Birch Bay, Blaine Birch Bay Boys and Girls Club for a $30,000 emergency request. That money is really going to be to finalize, not the final funding, there's still funding to go, but that $30,000 would cover that funding that I had asked the council to provide before. That includes that money, which then we had talked about having some public works, small works roster, but also guarantees that the roof on the building is metal. And that's really important to the city, believe it or not. Michael's got to go out and enforce rules and laws all the time based on design and design criteria. And the first thing that would happen is if we put an asphalt roof on that building is we would lose all of our integrity in requesting and requiring people to do things. So it was critical to have that roof installed, and we weren't going to let the project go forward without that. So we've met with members, at least one member of the District 2, and got some great advice and some recommendations. So we're going to ask for $30,000 tomorrow. That's going to come back. There's still about $70,000 that is out there to be raised. I think that's going to be accomplished before the need comes up for it. There's the other thing we need to do is we're going to have a special session with the school board. You know, things come up that you don't know about until they get in front of you. And one of the things we learned is that at some point in the past, maybe Charlie, you've been here a long time, you may remember this, that Councilman Lawrenson, which is that at one point the city owned this piece of property, the district owned that piece of property. They decided to swap it. In the middle of the swapping, they also decided to give away the right-of-way, which was the easement for the sewer utility. Sewer is still there, but the property now is owned by the district. There was also a building, which is the community center, built right on the property line without an easement approval. So all of this is to be determined as we go through trying to get the permit issued. So the school board's willing to meet on a special occasion, 8 o'clock next Tuesday morning. We're going to present our request for an easement. We're fully expecting them to support that. It's in their interest to do that. We're going to correct all of it in one fell swoop. So hopefully at our next meeting, we'll be able to report that the easement's completed, the permits are issued, the money's available to be funded. We're going to send the documents off to the people at the Ripken Foundation, and we'll get authorization to start the job. So we're not at the crest. We're pretty close to the top. So we're glad about that. Last thing I just wanted to mention, you know, everyone's been working so hard to get the federal government, state government, county government, WTA, all interested in the VACA system. There's been kind of this blitz. And I was so surprised, I haven't talked to you about this yet. I got a call from WSDOT last week, and apparently the GOA, the government, GAO has contacted them. They've got it on their list to do something with that system. So, of course, WSDOT's looking at it. They're very familiar with the intersection or the off-ramp study they did a few years back. And, you know, their impression is they know they don't have the money for it, but they want to do something. So, you know, they're having a meeting this week with the federal government. We tried to get into that meeting, and they wouldn't let us come in yet. We're just too early. But I thought that was great news, and I wanted to pass that on to you. So they may not put the full development in place, but they're certainly looking at making some changes to improve the situation. So you know, their solution is to put an overpass in. And that's just kind of mind-boggling when you think about that. Something, you know, redoing 274, including a big flyover. All things are possible, I guess. So that's all my report. I'll take any questions or comments. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we have our calendars. Any changes to the calendars?
Yes, for the Thursday, April 23rd Planning Commission meeting, we're adding a second public hearing, zoning and text amendment, Title 17 subdivisions, UD and science.
Okay. Alrighty, and our next meeting is on the 27th, and we have a study session starting at 4:30. Is that correct? Okay. Any unfinished business? Any council new business? Okay, the next item on the agenda is an executive session, and this is to discuss collective bargaining pursuant to RCW 42 period 30 period, 140, four in brackets. And we anticipate being how long?
Well, 12 minutes. You said 12 minutes. I'll do it as quickly as I can. It'll be based upon interest and questions. It could go pretty quickly.
Okay. And we anticipate some action.
Yes.
Okay.
My favorite time is 9 o'clock area.
Here we go. They said 7 o'clock. Missed it by...